Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. It's me, Simon Carverdy, with Matthew Jones, I'm going to go with first.
Baldur's great, more like.
It is, isn't it? It is. And also Matthew Perslow.
Hello.
There we go. It's lovely to have you both here. We are going to be talking more Baldur's Gate this week because, do you know what? It's kind of the only game that exists right now for anyone playing it, I think.
I know, so. Dark and Darker went out into early access, but I'm not playing that at the minute because it's Baldur's Gate, baby.
Exactly. I've gone a day and a half without playing Baldur's Gate and it's been quite hard.
Yeah, me too. Although, Dark and Darker has gone out on some weird platform that's not Steam, right, because of all of the issues. So,
it's a really very complicated situation, yeah.
It's gone very dark. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're going to talk about Baldur's Gate, and then I'm going to talk about Overwatch 2, because I haven't talked about Overwatch 2 in a while. Two very different ways to approach games, I think it's safe to say, but maybe we'll talk a little bit about that later. But Baldur's Gate 3, eh? I don't think we'll talk quite as long as we did about it last week, but like, it's just, we haven't heard what, Matt, you've had to think about Baldur's Gate yet, but I think I've played it, I'm like 25 hours in now. I'm a little bit into Act 2, and this game just gets better and better. It's just, I don't know what more else to say than it hasn't failed me yet at any turn, really.
The thing that happened last night that made me realize that I love it is that at the end of a quest line, there's like something, somebody says something that like, oh, we'll just meet you at your camp later on tonight. And I'm like, oh, that's cool. So, like, there's just going to be somebody there that I can talk to. And no, what actually happens is there's, like, a blowout party with everybody that I've saved during the mission. I'm like, I hope this keeps happening. Like, how cool is that for there to be, like, a reward for a quest well done? To have people just, like, celebrating in the background about how good a job you did. That's absolutely rocks.
Yeah. That relies on you being a good person, though. It could so horribly go. I imagine there's not a party at the end of every way that mission can end out. So.
I'm playing a paladin, so I'm incentivized to be very nice. So,
Give us your full character build. So, from the start, race, so, class.
Half elf, because I wanted weapon proficiency with basically everything. Mm-hmm. Paladin, because like I like the idea of playing kind of a goodie in these games, and it was the like folk hero version, so doing good and then having people like talk about the stuff that you've done, I think is the path that I wanted to go down. And like similar. 2 hours in, there's the bit where you save the Githyanki that's in the cage. I don't have her in my party, so I can't remember what her name is, but she accidentally kills one of the tieflings that's captured her, and that counted against my oath breaking. So for about 10 to 15 hours or however long that I've played, I just haven't had access to any of my lay on hands stuff. So I've been playing a paladin without any abilities.
So basically, if there's any killing in your party as a paladin, that breaks your oath, right?
And then I think it's that, like, if you do something that's clearly bad, right? Because killing, I think, can be justified depending on the scenario, right. But I've clearly done a bad thing in this situation. So if you do that, then this, I think at the end of combat, this knight appears to you in a vision, and he tells you off being an Oathbreaker, and he says, when you next go to camp, I'll be waiting there for you. And so I'm terrified this whole time. I'm like, I don't do long rests for a while. And so he does show up, and you can take on this like Oathbreaker path, which kind of makes you into a necromancer. Or you can pay him money to get your oath back, but it's like 1,000 gold. And so, like, you really got to care about it if you really want it. And so I did. I've saved up and done it. And now I'm ready to actually play the game again as the character that I've picked.
I wonder what the rules are on not killing this. So, like, can you just... When is that killing justified in their eyes? I don't know.
So,
like,
I'm doing...
I guess if you're defending innocence, right, that's a very paladin-style thing to do.
Totally. And I think, it, like, monsters as well. Like, I've just killed a couple of gnolls, and it didn't count against it, so that's totally fine. But I was doing the hag quest, and which I think is really fun. Like, the way it's that so you you encounter her on the road is really funny. Yeah. I won't spoil that. But there are guys that are in that quest that seem like they're innocent. And so I was like, well, I can't kill these guys, even though they're attacking me. I'm going to just have to knock them out. So I've like kind of paused that, but I want to go back to it and see like what would happen if I did it. Like, it just does feel like there's so many ways for me to go across these encounters, but the way that I tackle these could also be negatively beneficial to me as well. It's just cool, man.
One of the things that you were mentioning there is the Gifyanki, so Lysel that's in the cage. When we were talking about this last week, Hardy, you were like, I had not found Lysel when we were recording last week, and you were like, I can't believe you've not found her because she's there quite early on. Well, it turns out that the game has a sense of time progression, so when you have a rest and you pass on evenings and certain quests, when you walk into their environment, it creates almost like a ticking clock within the bubble of that environment. Well, Lysel is a character that has this attached to her. So she's in a cage when you first find her. But basically, if you don't go and find her very early on, she will break out of that cage and just go off elsewhere. And so it took me a very long time to find her. I won't spoil where she is for anybody that's not played it. But they are in a very, very different situation, and recruiting them is a completely different ball game from recruiting them if you find them in the cage. So again, like, this sense of reactivity in a sense of that, like, the Sword Coast is a place. Like, this beach that you've landed on is attached to a real world where events do happen, and there are... It's not just consequences for killing things, which is how consequences are dealt with in a lot of RPGs. Consequences for just merely existing, basically.
Yeah, time progresses. Crazy. Stuff's happening around you.
Yeah.
You can spend as long as you want or as short as you want as ever. Like, Matt, are you like nearly 30 hours in? But you're still in Act 1, right?
Yeah, so I haven't progressed to Act 2 yet. I have got, from what I can tell, only one more thing left to do. And that's because you mentioned that there was something. Mm-hmm. And I knew that that connected to another thing that I'd seen. But I have... In the time since we last spoke about it, I've had things where, you know, in Elden Ring, when you first find the elevator that takes you down to Ainsel River, and you're
like when you find the depths in Tears of the Kingdom, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's something that's a little bit similar to that, but there are two ways into it in Baldur's Gate. And I'm not going to say like where it goes.
There's three, actually.
Are there three?
I've found one of them, and it's pretty cool.
So the way I found it was, is I went into this area, which was hidden anyway, and it was a series of tunnels. And one of my characters just succeeded on a perception check and realized that it was just a wall that wasn't a wall. So I walk through this wall into a secret elevator, and it takes me into another section of the map that opened up, I want to say, at least three other stories that I then got to play through by just
an area like probably not as big as the overworld, but maybe like half as big.
Because you think it's small, you look at it and go, oh, it's kind of small, then you realize that there's two of those kind of quote-unquote small bits glued together, and then you realize that there's another loading screen that will take you into another section that is basically a Dishonored level. It is so
like
fucking good. The
dungeon,
the design of that dungeon has all of this. You know, you can leap up into the rafters and use the rafters to sneak around, and then there are little elevators that you can use, and that's got a whole storyline in it, and that's got a whole optional boss in it that is phenomenal. Like, it's one of those bosses that's got a trick to it. And when you work it out, you feel like an absolute genius about it.
That's cool.
So good. So good.
It's just such a... And I'm so glad, like, since we've talked about it, like, it hit like a million players on Steam. I'm just so glad people are showing they want this.
Yeah, I love that there's an audience out there for, like, a classic, old-school pen and paper RPG digital version.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It almost feels like the equivalent of what, you know, you can almost draw like a weird parallel to what's happening in films. Like Oppenheimer came out and like, this is what Nolan's been doing for years, like smart, like blockbusters, proving people want them. Mm-hmm. Like compared to like, you know, a lot of the stuff we've had, games isn't in the same position. There's still a lot more variety and stuff in games than there has been in films in recent years. But like, you know, you see all the free to play like stuff that people are slow, like starting to reject and go against. And then this game, like I'd say fully formed, it is a little bit buggy and I've had a couple of hard crashes, mm-hmm. by no means perfectly in a perfect shape. But, you know, you've got a full, what, meaty 100-hour smart game there that's, apart from a few games, like a handful of games maybe in the last decade, is unlike anything else you can play out there, yeah, really.
I don't think I've played personally something like this since, like, one of the Dragon Ages, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, something this, like, classically video gamey.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's the thing as well, right, is it's very video gamey because it adapts the 5th edition rules for D&D very faithfully. It obviously has several concessions, several changes to make it fit a video game better. But it is very number crunchy and it embraces the fact that it's number crunchy and it loves that fact about it.
When you get an item, I've got a pair of gloves that mm-hmm. I've put on Asterion that just rolls 2 dice and then gives you the higher attack die. Mm-hmm. I'm like, that shouldn't be a thing that you have in a video game. It shouldn't like mm-hmm. remove the artifice and just tell you, I'm rolling die now. Like that shouldn't be allowed. All of game design for the last 10 years has said like, remove that as much as mm-hmm. possible and smooth it over.
And yet it's exciting, right? Yeah. It is exciting when you find something that says, you can roll 2 dice for this. Like mm-hmm. I can remember I did a section, the most recent section I did before I had to go away for 2 days. The end result of that was I got a staff that meant any magic cast with that staff rolls on advantage die, so you get 2 spellcasting die.
That is amazing.
Die. Yeah. And it's like, when magic itself is already kind of like, you've got spell slots, right? You can only cast so many spells a day, mm-hmm. so you need every spell, ideally, to go flawlessly. To mm-hmm. then get one that says like, well, you know, if that it first roll now. Fucks, like yep. the next roll you get... like fantastic, mm-hmm. and you know we spoke last week about how good the tension is behind the ability check dies, like mm-hmm. when you're just rolling for persuasion and all of that, particularly now where I've got abilities that allow me to just stack bonus after bonus, and it's like I'm definitely going to pick this lock because I chose the right character for it, I've got the yeah. right tools for it, I've cast the right buffing spells on it.
I like it when there's 2 dice rolls and you've picked mm-hmm. a character specifically for 1 check, but yeah. then it'll give you a check right after it that they're not prepared for. Mm-hmm. That's really fun.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's just so clever. And I will say, like, if people said last week, like, give it a go, because even if you don't think you'll like it, you may well like it. And it can be a little... seeing questions about like the combat being quite hard at the start, which it can be a little, like the first couple of encounters, if you're not aware of what you can, like is possible in combat, can be quite difficult. I will say, like, try and get through that, because I'm now like level 6, I think, but from like level 3 or 4 onwards, I was like powerful enough to feel like I had the upper hand in most fights. Like I didn't feel at the start of the game, you kind of feel it. It's very smart. It's probably what they want. You feel like the stranger in this land. You feel at a disadvantage wherever you go. Whereas now I feel like I am like the one in charge, if you know what I mean. And it just feels so good. I'm just like blasting people into chasms. I will say it is a good way to defeat bosses, is just push them off of ledges and push them into like lava. But you don't sometimes get the cool stuff they're holding, which is the downside.
It happened to me in a fight in the goblin camp where Will got pushed into a pit, and it's a mm-hmm. pit that was behind a locked door, so I couldn't get him out until combat was over, and I didn't reset because I was like, this is so funny, like mm-hmm. how do I like
well that's one of the things, right, is the there's obviously this has ignited the debate around save scumming, right? In that if something like that happened to you, it's very tempting to just reload a save, mm-hmm. right, so that you can still have Will in your combat encounter. But I think this game is just one of those that absolutely embraces the idea of like, don't save scum, just roll with it, because you're gonna have a story by the end of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like when maybe two or three of us have finished the game, we can do a big old spoiler cast because we'll have completely different stories and it'll be really fun to share those. Mm-hmm. And I will say, look, I haven't been save scumming. I've only been doing it, like I said last week, if they're saying, like, if I want to talk to an animal just to find out if they're saying anything funny, mm-hmm. I'll load it up to reroll. Not doing it for like critical mission stuff, but yeah, like fun stuff like that. So I really want to know what that ox mm-hmm. had to say or something like that. But
there's some stuff.
I've got 274 save files already.
There's some stuff where I'm like, if I want to test that something's possible, mm-hmm. but I don't want it to be canonical for the run that I'm doing, like absolutely, I'll do something weird to see it, but I'm happy for it to fail.
Yeah God, it's good.
Mm-hmm. What's your like funnest like combination of abilities? Like, what are you building characters to be able to do silly stuff to, like,
let me have a think. Matt, what
obviously kind of like I think kind of mine, I don't like necessarily min-maxing in games. I don't think there's a lot of fun in min-maxing. But kind of like I agree with you that like building around like combos is interesting. But like, have you got Karlach yet, Matt?
No, I don't. Yeah.
So Karlach's like a tiefling barbarian, and when you level her up, there's you know, because leveling up in Baldur's Gate is very different to leveling up in a lot of games, right? Where it's not just about stats, but you get additional properties that you can add to them, and she's got stuff that's around. Like different feats, which is like she can like channel basically like the power of a bear or the power of a tiger and stuff like that, and kind of like essentially building all of that to allow her to have the most amount of hits possible. So what you can do is you can send, she's massive, she's like built like a wrestler basically, and you can have her charge in, rage up, and then create the most amount of hits. That you can do loads of like bleeding effects with her as well. Mm-hmm. So you can essentially turn her into pretty much like a one-hit wonder.
That
which
rules.
I really like that. I'm trying to think if there are any magic combinations that I like. Yeah.
I'm still rolling with Karlach, Will, and Shadow Heart. Mm-hmm. Those are my three. Mm-hmm. I've got good combos because they all have abilities, including my character. Like, I kind of build a lot of my fights around just moving people around mm-hmm. and trying to move them either into poisonous gas or into lava or just off of edges. So like my main character has Thorn Whip and so does Shadow Heart, which is like mm-hmm. a whip which can basically pull enemies towards you in the direction.
I've got that. Yeah, it's great.
But I basically just stand across from like bridges from them or chasms and pull them into chasms.
Such a good idea.
And I also have Thunder Wave, which is a really cool bit. It's like puts like almost like a cone of vision, and in that direction any enemy will be flung backwards that it hits. So I did that to like a group of like three like little horrible people in the lava pit. And then also Will has got his Eldritch Blast, which now I've upgraded so it pushes people back 5 meters when it hits them. So I'm just basically flinging everyone around the arena. That's what my style is, just completely just hurling people into chasms.
How good is Grease, by the way? Grease is so good.
Absolutely a like hint back to the Divinity Original Sin games, which was so obsessed with different physical properties on the surfaces and stuff like that. But slipping people up with grease and then setting the grease on fire is hilarious. Yeah. There's a chapel that you can go to quite early on, and if you go in one area, you start in a little room, and then the people in the room next door all hear you come in, so they all start rushing through the door. But obviously on turn one, there's only one of them that has got through the door. So I threw grease on the floor there, and just every time someone new tried to get in the room, they just slipped over until I just got a pile of prone people. And then you just set fire to the grease, and then they sit there for 10 turns burning.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, what a game. Mm-hmm. I mean,
I could just talk about weird interactions that have happened all day. So, yeah.
Asterion is great as a stealth one as well, because mm-hmm. you can have him as his bonus action, you can send him back into stealth after he's done a thing,
yeah,
so you
really,
can make
really
him hide when around. But also, you can get like a spell that just makes a shitload of fog appear, so you can just get
people. Oh, so he's always got advantage. Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, but then also, like, people that are firing into that fog have disadvantage on you because they can't see you.
I've got him as an arcane trickster, so I can probably mm-hmm. get that, but probably. I don't have that spell. I hadn't thought about that, or maybe I need to do a little rebuild.
Mm-hmm. There's just so, and I know like there's just so many options and things going in this game that like I'm not gonna. I, I've admit to myself, I'm not seeing everything on my first playthrough, so why bother? Like, I will do a more evil run, I think. The Dark Urge does sound
I want to know what happens if you cut Will's hand off and then see him later on in the game. I've got to know.
Yeah. But, God, yeah. Very good game. IGN_UKPP@IGN.com if you've got any more.
Tell us about your weird builds and your weird interactions.
Exactly. I do want to talk to someone who's properly playing Bard just to see how you get through a lot of the game, like talking to people and just singing to people.
One of the funniest things I've seen from Bard is someone playing a Bard, and like, so you can get like your lute or your flute out or whatever you've got and play, and people will come around you and they give you money like they would, you know, as a busker would. But then you can just get someone like Gale to cast Thunderwave on all of these people that have surrounded you.
Oh, that's evil, but very fun. Yeah, I've kind of warmed back to Gale again. I said at the end of last week I wasn't too sure about him. I've kind of learned more about him.
Because he's eating all of your items. Yeah.
Have you had Gale die in a combat encounter yet?
No, because I haven't really used him in combat. He's kept him at camp.
One of those things, like you were saying earlier, Matt, about the idea of like you can make a save just to let something happen. I would recommend making a save and just letting Gale die.
I think he has in a combat that I've done.
Have you had him die? Because they can go down, but then they have to do three that death saving rolls.
Yeah, then he's just been dead.
Yeah,
but not
so if he
died.
Fails, if he fails all of his saving rolls, something happens, and it's weird.
That's cool.
It's quite
funny.
I think I might
know what it is now. I know more about him, but I do want to see that.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah, I think, if I do a replay, I'll do Dark Urge and then just use, like, characters. I'll use, like, Lyzel, Gale, and Asteris, like, three I haven't been using. Mm-hmm. It'll be, like, not a completely new game, but a largely new game.
I couldn't imagine playing this game without Asterion. He's so my good. Boy.
Yeah. I love him to pieces.
See, I just don't get on with him, and things have happened where I'm just I could have kicked you out of camp.
I love how theatrical he is. Like, he's the perfect, like, you know, he is an arcane trickster. Like, it makes sense. Like, all of his personality works into the... like the class archetype that he's labeled as. God, like, I just look, like, the way he just calls you darling every time, like, you check out of a conversation with him, it's so fun.
Yeah, very good game. And yeah, well done, Larry. Good stuff.
Yeah,
it worked. Yeah,
you made
nice one. Exactly. Overwatch 2 is another game that's been made. Blizzard not had quite the easy ride, quite the smooth time with Overwatch recently that maybe Baldur's Gate is welcome.
Can you talk to me about how John Cena's involved in this?
I don't even know. He's in like an advert and that's it. I think they've literally got him in an advert.
Right.
Like, Overwatch advertising is weird at the moment. Like, me and Matt, we were in Paris yesterday and massive Gare du Nord in Paris, like three massive Overwatch 2 billboards. Like, I don't like,
and
they've been massive on it over.
And when I got back to London, when I was waiting at London Bridge to get on the Jubilee line, that got another massive poster, the same poster just in English.
I don't know if they're going massive. So, for context, yesterday was the launch of Season 6 of Overwatch 2. And it's significant because not only has it got a lot of the normal stuff a new season of Overwatch launches these days, but it is the first story missions that Overwatch promised a long time ago. Overwatch 2, the whole conceit of Overwatch 2 was that it was going to be a largely PvE story led mission experience. We finally got three of those missions and I've played the first two of them, having a good time. No, the missions themselves are pretty much what they promised in when they revealed them.
So they're more substantial than the co-op experiences they used to do.
They're higher production value. There's more going on to levels. There's like environmental damage stuff happening. There's actual full story cutscenes. You're progressing through levels. It's not just like wave-based things. You're actually moving through. It's more like a short, like, you know, Call of Duty style, or even like a short Destiny style is probably more appropriate mission. The first one is the Rio one, which they revealed a long time ago, which is a short mission. That's like 10 to 15 minutes and done, the first one.
Right.
But the second one in Toronto, which I just played, that was more like 30 to 40 minutes. That was a fuller mission.
Okay.
And it does, and there's a lot more enemy variety than you ever got in. If you ever played Overwatch, the whole, like, either Junkenstein's Revenge or the Omnic Crisis missions, they were quite, you know, you played it once, you didn't have to revisit them. Let's put it that way. They were quite one note. These do have a bit more to them. There's actual like NPCs and people like that talking. You have to escort and protect and things like that. The missions themselves, and I've heard the third one, which takes place in Gothenburg, which is a location we just haven't played before in Overwatch, is very good. I'm going to play it afterwards there, I think, but that one is meant to be very good and have some really cool like big cinematic like set piece moments to it. I will. It's just the way they've done it, isn't it? Like Overwatch is just Blizzard have like. They had such a gem in their hands and they've slowly like roughened it up. Mm. Like it's the opposite of how do you polish a turd. They had a diamond and they've slowly covered it in turd. The problem is I've been playing a lot of Overwatch 2 the last couple of weeks and it is so fun. The game itself at the moment is in such a fun place. Like it seems quite balanced. I'll talk about the new hero they introduced yesterday, who's very fun, and a new mode they introduced yesterday, which is very fun. But you've got these three story missions, which I imagine in total you're looking at between, I don't know, hour and a quarter and an hour and a half to play all three. Like, that's the content you're getting this season, story mission-wise. The problem is, it's not free. So you have to pay £12 or $15 for the Invasion Bundle, which gets you those three story missions and 1,000 credits, so effectively the Battle Pass. Those 1,000 credits normally cost, I think, about £8.50. So if you take that out of it, you're effectively paying about £4 for an hour and a half of story content, which, compared to some other DLCs and stuff out there, isn't the worst. But also, it's just like, when Overwatch 2 was a game meant to come with story content, mm-hmm. then backtracking on a lot of that story content and then saying, oh, and we're going to make you pay for it, by the way, it just leaves a bad taste in the mouth, doesn't it? It's just, there's a story to be told somewhere with what's happened with this game. But
yeah, I'd imagine it involves lot of shareholders and people in suits.
It's probably quite a dull story, an annoying story more than anything. Like, there's probably... But yeah, the missions themselves are fun. There's good interactions. Like, I've been dying for story content in Overwatch for, 6 years? Like, over 6 years? I still want an anime show or a Netflix show. I'm probably not going to get it anytime soon, so this is... as good as we'll get, like the cutscenes in between missions. And they still, that's the annoying thing. There's still so much there to enjoy. Like, the music's incredible. There's still the odd line. Like, they do manage to pull on your heartstrings if you love these characters. Like, there are those little moments. Like, Blizzard animations have always been so good. And, like, so many of those Overwatch shorts, like, I don't know, is there like 10 of them now? Like, probably mm-hmm. 7 and 8 of them can, like, bring a tear to your eye if you want. Like, they know what they're doing. It's just frustrating that it's kind of turned into a bit of a mess. But like I said, the game itself is free to play. If you've never tried Overwatch, I'd encourage you at the moment playing it. It's very fun at the moment. And the new hero, Illari, is a healer in pretty much all but name. She's effectively a damage healer. I think she's Peruvian, and she basically commands the power of the sun is her thing. So she can heal. Her L2 is like a healing beam that can heal people. And then I think her R1 is basically like a healing turret, like a Torbjorn turret mm-hmm. that heals people that come close to it, which is very useful. But also, her main damage is just she basically kind of has like a big laser gun. It's just a bit like Ashe's gun that can do a lot of damage. And also, she can like do an AO, I think it AOE heals people, like a big like leap, which is very useful. But her ultimate is a pure damage ultimate, which is the funny thing. You basically fly into the air and fire a big like ball of sun onto the ground and anyone that's like caught in it gets damaged.
That's pretty sick.
And like she is really fun. Like, she's basically a damage dealer and a healer all in one go. Like, a bit like Moira. Like, I've already, the games I've played, it's like the person will have 8,000 healing, which is quite a bit, but also like 22 eliminations. It's like, she's very fun. But the problem is, like, will you get that much healing from her, or do people just want to kill? That's the question. But I've been enjoying her a lot. And she comes hand in hand with the new Flashpoint mode, which is actually probably the best new mode. Like, I'm still not 100% sold on Push, which they introduced at the start of Overwatch 2, which is a bit like Tug of War. Flashpoint is basically Call of Duty's Hardpoint mode. And it is very fun. It suits Overwatch perfectly, I think. So basically, there's two maps you can play it on. The new India one is like stunning to look at. It's so good. And they're bigger maps than we've ever seen in Overwatch before. And it's basically the first, there'll be four rotating points around the map that are chosen at random. And both teams have to go and capture that point and hold it for to get to 100%. And it's first to three of those capture points wins the game. But it, like, the way you can attack those points are, like, amazingly laid out. And it, you can actually come back, which in a lot of Overwatch, especially with push mode, I find it very hard to do a full comeback. Whereas in this one, like, the first game I played of it last night, we were 2-0 down, but then came back to win 3-2 just for, like, a couple of little, like, hero changes. It felt so good. So, yeah, just my little PSA that if you've never tried Overwatch, it is free to play, and I'd recommend playing it. It's just a shame that they continue to make people buy more and more of that game, because it's just frustrating. It's such a... It's still one of my favourite games, but, like, the more it goes on, the more you're just, like, not embarrassed to say you love Overwatch, but you're, like, you have to have the caveat of, like, I know it's bad in some ways, but it's still so, so fun that, yeah, I'll never probably fully drive myself away. I doubt you guys are ever going to pick up Overwatch ever again, are you?
No, nope.
Probably not. No, quite honestly, like, the co-op, so I think... I genuinely feel like my days of competitive multiplayer are probably sort of over. I just don't care for it anymore. I do love those characters. You know, I had a great time with them back in the day, but the way that this version of Overwatch has been built, I just don't think isn't for me. And quite honestly as well, like, I tried to play Diablo 4 as well. I've played, like, quite a lot of the first act, but I think the drive of that into kind of like the more games of a service sort of world doesn't work for me. Obviously, Blizzard has changed as a company in many respects, or quote unquote hasn't changed depending on which area we're talking about, but there's been a lot of problem with Blizzards. But I think at the moment, this kind of drive into making much more kind of like secular style, where you just constantly have to keep coming back and playing things and back and playing things and sort of like doing, it's building into games that are not what I want. And I wouldn't say we're in the golden age of games that I do like, but the age of games that I like being much more important are here. Like, the Baldur's Gate is here, Tears of the Kingdom is here. Like, there are big From Software games that can keep me busy for like 200 hours. Like, the Armored shit Core's that I
around
like.
The corner.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, the moment I get back from Gamescom, it's going to be like carrying on tidying up with Baldur's Gate, but also I'm going to have a new FromSoft game to play, and it's got mechs in it. I can fucking shoot missiles from like 40 feet in the sky.
Ah, but D.Va can do that as well. Yeah. So
D.Va's the best.
I think that my feelings about what I want out of a competitive shooter have really significantly changed. Like, I played a lot of the finals beta and really loved it. And I think that kind of like fast-paced acquisition, like kind of combat, I think that's more what I want out of shooters than...
Is the finals the one which has got like, was that the one made by the ex-Battlefield people? Has it got sort of like collapsing buildings in it and stuff?
Yeah, it's
got like
destruction
that?
And movement and, you know, it's a 3v3.
Cool. Yeah, almost like a bit Mirror's Edge crossed with Battlefield.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah, I loved the look of that. I've not played it. I think for me to come back to the competitive side, like, I'm not necessarily an extraction shooter person, but I'm really fascinated by what extraction shooter is doing and shaking up, and because I really liked Hunt Showdown. I haven't played Hunt Showdown for a while, but I know, Matt, you like it as well. But I like that that's a properly fresh take on the sort of experience you can get out of competitive shooting.
Mm-hmm. And it's systems and mechanics overlapping each other, which is the thing that I actually care about in video games.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think whilst I'm not fully on board with the extraction shooters, those are the sort of thing that's probably going to pull me back. Like, I played like a fair bit of Call of Duty DMZ and thought that was much more interesting than Warzone. But I'm more interested to see, well, what's the next evolution of these sort of more systems-driven competitive games where there's actually bigger objectives and more interesting kind of win states than just killing things.
I can't say there's a multiplayer shooter I'm very excited to play at the moment, like that's upcoming. The one I will keep my eyes on is Marathon, just because of Bungie's pedigree, and that's the style of that instantly grabbed me. But yeah, none of these. There's the
Hyenas has maybe got a chance too, but we've not seen anything of it.
I don't know. It's just like you, Matt. I think it's because Overwatch is more of a comfort blanket for me than anything.
I absolutely understand that. Yeah,
you know, it's not. I'm not actively, you know, trying to progress and get mm-hmm. up battle passes and stuff. Like, yeah, gone on my... We've talked a lot about Call of Duty the last couple of days. Gone on my days of, like, yeah, playing 4 hours of Team Deathmatch mm-hmm. just for the hell of it, I think.
Yeah, but, yeah, obviously the last one that I was really hooked into was Rainbow Six, and I still massively admire Siege, like, again, mm-hmm. very systems-heavy multiplayer game with, like, interesting win states and cool mm-hmm. sort of destruction stuff like that. But I ultimately think my problem with there is I've played like 600, 700 hours of that, which I know for exactly. many people is not a lot, but for me that is a lot of one yeah. multiplayer game.
I mean, I was massively into Warzone as well, and like, but I've had my fill of Battle mm-hmm. Royale now, I think. And I think if I boot up Warzone, I'd just instantly get reminded of the pandemic now, and I don't need that in my head. So, yeah. Yeah. Multiplayer shooters are in a... It's hard to think something brand new for those, isn't it?
Like, it's also more difficult than ever to break through the wall, right? So I think even games that... Obviously, our job is to find the interesting games and tell people about them, but even then it can be difficult to know if something actually genuinely has a chance of breaking past the Fortnite wall, basically, and getting the players that you need for that experience to be worthwhile recommending.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. If you have an unknown or a upcoming, I don't know, first person shooter you're looking forward to, let us know, IGN_UKFootballIGN.com. Let us know if there's anything you think that's very interesting that's under the radar.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Radar, maybe. Do you know what's not under the radar, though? It's the biggest game on the planet. It's the Endless Search.
Inside, it's the UK IGN crew. Yeah, and the ones and twos, we got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Hold tight, the DJ, we're coming through. Yeah, and the ones and twos, we got the games gonna play for you. Inside, I got a question for you. Is it in the search?
We have another edition of the Endless Starch to play this week, sent in by listener Christian. I'm gonna say Gwilliam. I think it's Gwilliam. I'm sorry if I've mispronounced it.
I heard it last week, and it seemed like so much fun. I specifically requested it.
Yeah,
I said, you're not getting me on unless I can play The Endless Starch.
If you didn't listen last week or just don't know what The Endless Starch is, it's a game where basically one letter of a game title has been changed, and there are clues that hint at what that new game title could be. I'll say it again. GTA, My City, and the clue would be rodents in a big old Florida city playing game. There you go. That would have been the clue. let's just play. We've got 8 of them here from Christian he sent in. So thank you as ever. IGN_UKFeedback@IGN.com if you want us to play a game. Let's just go with it. It's just first to say it gets the point. So here we go. Let me just make a note of the scores because I have not done that anywhere. Okay, the first clue is, after being haunted by demented versions of his own creations, the title character becomes increasingly aware of socio-political discourse. After being haunted by demented versions of his own creations, the title character becomes increasingly aware of socio-political discourse.
I mean, it's Disco Elysium, but what is the...
Oh, it's not.
No?
It's not. No. I could add an extra clue to it if nothing's coming to mind here.
Yeah, because the only thing I can think of is Frankenstein, but I think that's just because of the creature bit.
Okay. After being haunted by demented versions of his own creations that he's written, the title character becomes increasingly aware...
Alan Woke.
Woke. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, Alan Woke, eh?
That was pretty good.
Yeah, there we go. That is 1 point to... I was going to say 1 point to Matt. That's no use to anyone. 1 point to Matt J. Question number 2. There are many reasons to be scared of global conflict. Whether it's epic destruction, violent weaponry, or dying hordes, it's reasonable to be scared of battle. There's just many reasons to be scared of conflict. I think it is pretty reasonable to be scared.
Is it fears of war?
It is fears of war. This is an MJ game.
Yeah, clearly.
Come on, Matt.
It's just interesting how different people, the way that they'd write the clues. Like, these clues feel genuinely impenetrable to me compared to last week where I was doing really well with them.
We'll see. It's still all to play for.
Yeah, ways, don't they? Mm-hmm. I've still got 6 more. This baby bovine animal knows what he must do. He must fight for his country. Maybe in World War II, maybe in the future, but he will answer.
This baby I can do it.
Bovine animal. That narrows it down quite a bit. This baby bovine animal knows what he must do. He must fight for his country. Maybe in World War II, maybe in the future. But he will answer.
Is it Calf of Duty?
That's really good. I was trying to modify Duty.
There's the calf, that baby bovine. 5 more. Engage the FTL drive and walk billions of light years into a new galaxy in search for the perfect freshwater fish to give as a gift to a beautiful alien.
Is it a Bass Effect?
It is Bass
That's
Effect.
That's good.
I think I might have done Science Sim that one before. We've probably repeated some of these. Who knows? It's all fun. 2 all with 4 left. The comeback's on. Your pet dog is pulling at his chain, eager to attack the zombie hordes. But you can't be sure what he wants to do. If only he had a way to tell you. Your pet dog is pulling at his chain, eager to attack the zombie hordes. But you can't be sure that's what he wants to do. If only he had a way to tell you. Ooh. This one's a bit more difficult because it's probably not the obvious game you think of when you think of zombie games. But I will say it's a more recent one. Mm-hmm. But dogs can't talk, though, but what can they do?
Oh, God.
Any ideas?
The only thing I could think of was Day's Bone.
No, okay, it's not. It's a co-op game, and it's not Left 4 Dead.
Bark for Blood.
It is Bark.
I would have never gotten that. Yeah,
I gave you some extra clues.
I totally forgot that game came out. I played quite a lot of it too.
Yeah, me too.
The combat's been completed. 3-2 to Matt P, but 3 left to play. Could swing back. 3 more. Here we go. The last thing a tavern musician from ye old days wants is to be flung from a giant catapult. All to attempt to destroy some large structures and the pigs inside them. It makes them really
angry
quite
bards.
Furious. It is Angry Bards. There we go. That was a good one. There we go. 3-3 with 2 left. Could be a draw. In this VR game, instead of cutting up the music, why not download it and store it on your hard drive?
Is it... Oh, God. Beat the Saver.
It is Beat Saver. There we go. 4-3. It has swung. Wow, what a thriller. 1 left to play. Will it be a draw? Will it be a win? The last one. In this game, you run a helpline for people who have got something sharp stuck in their finger. Playing as a man called Sam, fish around in dialogue choices to determine the best way to help. In this game, you run a helpline for people who have got something sharp stuck in their finger. I mean, that's probably all you need. Playing as a man called Sam.
I know it's Splinter around. Cell, but I can't find the... Wait. Yeah.
In this game, you run a helpline.
Splinter Call?
It is Splinter Call.
That's good.
There we go. I'm sorry it's going to have to end 4-4, but didn't the game win ultimately? Didn't fun win? The fun was had, and it was what a fun time for all.
That was great. I love how you either get it immediately or
you'll never get it. Yeah, there's no in between. But yeah, thank you, Christian. That was fun. And we will do more games soon. Right now, though, it is time for some more feedback. IGN_UKFeedback@IGN.com for anything. Talk about anything you want with us, really. We'll enjoy it. Who have we got up first, Matt?
This one is from Dale Hall. So not our Dale, Dale. A new Dale enters the arena. He says, "Hi, guys. Great podcast as always. Your talk on Baldur's Gate 3 made me want to try a game genre I've never been a fan of. So thanks for always giving honest opinions, great analysis, and being great salesmen or women for games, even if you don't try to be."
I try and make sure that, like, the enthusiasm comes across. Like, I really like it, and I think everybody would.
It is. Yeah. Obviously, I think we have waxed lyrical, and people will definitely know what we think of Baldur's Gate at this point. I just wanted to say my recent experience in cinema has truly put me off going to the cinema. Sorry, Cardi. Because obviously, Cardi, you were saying that you love cinema.
See on the biggest screen you can.
Exactly.
So Dale says that he went to see the new TMNT, very cool film, but ruined by a child next to me. He's all for kids going to the cinema, but it's the parents' jobs to teach them etiquette of cinema going. This child constantly talked and asked questions and reacted to the film very loudly and annoyingly. For example, at one point, they shouted, I'm going to guess this is a hi-ya, as in the sort of like...
Not a hi-ya.
Yeah. As in the ninja sort of sound effect.
I had this joke recently where I thought about a kung fu themed restaurant, mm-hmm. and they'd have a sign out front that said "now hi-ying" instead of hiring. It's barely a joke.
Yeah. I gave the parents a look at one point, but they barely acknowledged it and just allowed it to continue. The cinema was very busy, so I couldn't even move anywhere else. It ruined the movie. I bet you're thinking, I'm not a parent, I don't get it, but I am. I have a 2-year-old that will be taught the right way to behave in a cinema when the time comes. My dad, on my first experience, told me, if you're loud, the whole cinema will hate you. Harsh, maybe, but it worked. Thanks again for the great podcast, RTS and the cinema.
Yeah.
Did we talk about this at all? About
the
trend?
Is this just more
of
a social parenting issue than it is cinema going?
I do think that there is a trend of people that are more willing to just be on their phones in cinemas than they used to.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's just a thing now.
People can't just watch things anymore. Like, I do it at home. Like, second screen is everywhere, isn't it? It's hard to just sit there and watch things.
Yeah, I think I feel more inclined to actually watch something if I'm in a cinema because there's the social contract. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
I think I'm more willing to choose where I'm seeing films now to try and avoid this kind of situation. Mm-hmm. Like, I love going to the Prince Charles here. Sure. Like, it's just something that, like, I don't think that you would even go to that cinema if that was a thing that you were inclined to do.
That's a place for people that love films, right? Mm-hmm. Like, the entire vibe of that cinema is designed around people that have an appreciation for the medium. But, I mean, I thought that's kind of what the Curzon was nearby us. You know, Curzon, it's a
bit high-end.
Yeah, well, it's sort of in the same sphere as the BFI, isn't it? It's got that kind of, like, they're all into independent cinema and doing that. And so I expect when you go to a Curzon, particularly a Curzon that, you know, by our office, it's not in a residential area, really, by any means. Mm-hmm. But when we went to see Barbie, I sat next to a woman that was on her phone the entirety of the 1¾ hours that film's on for. It's not a long time.
No,
and there's action, there's jokes, there's stuff happening. It's not like you can get bored.
By no means boring. Yeah, no. Yeah. I don't know.
So yeah, so I do think there's definitely, like, you can go out and find cinemas where you expect to find that etiquette, but also sometimes that can backfire on you. Actually, the last two times that I've been to the Curzon, it has been with people that were at Mission Impossible. There were people that just spoke through the first 15 minutes of that film.
Oh yeah, I'm pretty sure a homeless gentleman on drugs came in halfway through to sleep and then left about 20 minutes later as well. So that was an event.
Yeah, but the thing is like the, you know, a homeless person turning up in a cinema is a very different issue to someone that has paid to adhere to the same social contract that you have. Then just talking through essentially the exposition scene at the start of Mission Impossible that sets up what the whole fucking thing's about.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't worry too much. They keep repeating it throughout the whole film.
Yeah, yeah.
I am aware of that, having watched almost 3 hours of that film. Yes, I am aware. But I wish there was a more distinct appreciation of, particularly like the, you know, what you classically call like the Kermode and Mayo cinema, like, etiquette board.
Oh yeah. Maybe we should just have like ejector chairs in cinemas. If you make a certain decibel level, you get ejected into the air, or maybe a trap floor. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm up for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Bring back masks in cinemas. People didn't speak. Wouldn't stop the phones, but yeah. Ugh, people, eh? I've got an email here from Craig Watts. He says, "Hey guys, loving the pod as always. Thought I'd give you my thoughts on learning a language. We spoke a little bit about that last week, about like playing games in different languages in particular." Craig says, "Immersing yourself is the best way. You learn pretty quick when the consequences of not understanding the local languages are dire. I lost my toothpaste en route to China, and most shops were closed as it was during the last part of Chinese New Year. I found a shop eventually and mimed the action of brushing teeth whilst grinning at the shopkeeper. He was clearly trying to sell me industrial strength glue, blatantly not toothpaste. I can only assume he didn't sell toothpaste, but didn't want to miss out on a sale." What would happen if you put super glue on your teeth? That sounds hot.
It'd stick your gums to your teeth, wouldn't it? I'm fairly sure.
Or would you just like glue your teeth together as well?
I think the original purpose that super glue was invented for was like in the Vietnam War to glue like wounds back together. So
that is a great fact, if true.
I would definitely research that because it's like at the back of my mind, and it might not necessarily. But the Vietnam War was big it was a horrendous conflict, obviously. So a lot of things got invented to power through it. I think super glue might have been that. But yeah, basically, like, you can use it to glue actual flesh back together. So I would imagine brushing with super glue is a terrible idea.
It looked like a form of super glue. It was actually something during World War II. I don't know. I don't have time to read this for Wikipedia on the creation of, is it cyanoacrylate?
Whatever. I do know that it will glue flesh together, because when I've built Warhammer with super glue, my fingers get stuck together.
Yeah, it's not a fun time. Did you like playing with glue guns as a kid at school?
Oh, hell yeah.
Fun,
they used to terrify me because of how hot they get. And they're like really flimsy glue guns, are they? Just like a little bit of plastic with this glue rod in the back.
You can't trust me around a candle as well at dinner if a little candle wax is coming down a candle. Nothing better than that.
Nothing in what way? Touching it?
Yeah, well, like ripping a little bit off and then having a little like waxy candle wax to play around with while you're eating.
There we go.
Were you the sort of kid that used to paint your hand in PVA glue at school and then peel the glue off?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was good. Pretend to be Spider-Man before. Anyway, let's carry on. Craig carries on to say, anyway, I spent 8 years in China and finally cracked the language. Every day I would plan what I might need to say to someone and try to memorize those words in advance. I learned the word for toothpaste fairly quickly. I'd also try to prepare some possible replies to questions that I might be asked. I think when it directly impacts you not knowing these things, your brain remembers it a little better. I also stuck sticky notes on things around my apartment with the Chinese translation on them. It requires minimum effort and you see it every day, so repetition is key. That's a clever thing to do. Just, you know, if you go to the fridge, what's the Chinese word for fridge? Stuff like that. I get that. I also try to relate similar sounding English words to help me remember. It's not actually massively helpful in Chinese, but there are a few. One being a kind of meat kebab that you can buy in China. The name of it sounds a bit like Roger Moore. This made it easier to remember and also funny. Let's go and get a Roger Moore was a common sentence among my friends. I've attached a screenshot of Roger Moore. It was in another email. It did just look like a nice little like Chinese style kebab.
Hell yeah.
It did look quite good. Look forward to the next podcast. Respect the sea and Roger Moore. Don't respect unscrupulous shopkeepers. There we go. I do respect Roger Moore. Long since gone.
R.I.P.
Yeah. But yeah, there we go.
Do you think he would have supported your campaign to be the next Bond?
Have I told the story of like the reason that in my Bond audition video, one of the reasons Barbara Broccoli is in such a bad mood is like Roger Moore died very soon before that. So
as in within hours or
mood. Days or weeks, maybe weeks. And I think the person that interviewed her just before me was just doing like a big retrospective on Roger Moore, and she got quite sad. And then aww. I walk in like an absolute tit.
Hey, I'm doing a goof.
Yeah. What do you think? Could I be the next Rog? There we go.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've got one more email from another Jones, I believe.
Wow. Alex a Jones. Kindred. Hi.
There's not many of those, are there?
No, Jones? Exactly. It's very
uncommon.
Yeah, absolutely. Diamond in the rough. Alex has said in episode 708, which is the one before this one, which was very good, go check it out. It's got Baldur's Gate in it. Cardi told Jesse to give season 2 of True Detective a miss and just watch 1 and 3.
For the record, mm-hmm. I like season 2 of True Detective more than most people. I think it's kind of okay.
Certainly,
but
more
I would
than me.
Still skip it. I would still skip it though.
Yeah, I didn't find it very exciting. Series 2 is undoubtedly a little bit messy and attempts to explore too many plot lines at once, but there are also some absolutely incredible performances from Colin Farrell and Vince Vaughn. Particularly, I find Farrell's morally ambiguous character deliberately trying to cling onto his collapsing family life to be quite moving. Won't pretend it's anywhere near the heights of season 1, but I do think it's worth watching. In an age where a lot of film and TV feels designed by committee for mass appeal, there's something to be said for a singular vision from one creator, even if it is a bit uneven. Banging theme song too. Perfect for the end of the show. Are there any TV series that you enjoy, even though you know that they're a little bit of a mess?
Absolutely. Is anyone? I've got one. If anyone,
please go right ahead.
Did anyone else watch Vinyl, the HBO show?
No.
Okay, so it was the follow-up from the creators of Boardwalk Empire. So it was actually produced by Scorsese, Terrence Winter, who is key of Boardwalk Empire, and Mick Jagger. So it was set in 1970s New York in the music industry as the time of things were like transitioning to more sort of like hip hop and disco and punk away from like rock and roll. And it's all about this. Bobby Cannavale plays like a record executive in this, and it's all about like trying to adjust to that time. And basically it's a bit like Boogie Nights. That's why I like it. I only had one season before it was cancelled. It had 10 episodes. First episode, the pilot was directed by Scorsese. It was uneven. It was a little bit like direction. It's like, where are we going here? But like, I just found it really funny because it kind of had that like coked up Boogie Nights energy of like, it was kind of just sex, drugs and rock and roll. That's what this show was. And it just had loads of like funny cameos from like people, like young actors pretend to be like young, like Led Zeppelin and John Lennon and like people like that. Like the list of, historical figures like Led Zeppelin were in this, the Carpenters, like Karen Carpenter, Alice Cooper, Presley, Elvis Presley, I think Bob Marley, I think, was in it. Like, it was just like, do you remember all these musicians from the 70s? Here's Bobby Cannavale doing coke with them and then going home to get in an argument with Olivia Wilde. So that's kind of what this show was. But I enjoyed it for 10 episodes. and maybe it would have gone somewhere if I had more seasons, but I also fully understand it probably cost a lot of money and no one really watched it. But yeah, it came out like, was it like 2016, I think? But yeah, Vinyl. Check that out if there's any way to watch Vinyl. Yeah, it was kind of fun. Yeah, there you go. Don't know if you guys have got any shows you
I think
love
like,
that you know were a mess.
TV is such an investment that I think, you know, if I'm not particularly enjoying it and it's only just okay, the only one I can think of is like, I think I stuck with Heroes for quite a long time after all of that mess.
I have watched the entirety of it. Did you watch all the way through to the revival they did a few years ago?
I don't think so, no.
The revival is quite messy.
Mm.
It's not good. The one that I was thinking of is I've probably watched an awful lot of shows that I would, you know, I sort of like liked at the time or whatever that were messy. But I find, and I find these days it more fascinating than necessarily liking. But did either of you ever watch Dollhouse, which was kind of Joss Whedon's final?
Yeah. I didn't see the second season. I think I just watched the first one.
So I find Dollhouse an absolutely fascinating like beast, because what it is so for anyone that doesn't know, the story of Dollhouse is it's a quite horrific like system where there's a house that is full of people who've had their minds wiped, and they are essentially shopped out as escorts effectively to clients, and they have a bunch of personalities on hard drives and you can plug them into them. So for example, like a lot of the early stuff is a kind of like, oh, this incredibly rich billionaire needs a girl on his arm to go to a party. So you put in like, you know, kind of like a spunky sort of personality into it. But also there would be other examples like, oh, we need a bomb disposal expert. So we stick the bomb disposal expert in their head.
And it means that Eliza Dushku is basically playing a different character every episode, which is kind of cool conceptually.
And it's one of these where it's kind of like, obviously Joss Whedon's quite a contentious character these days for absolutely valid reasons. But also we were having a chat the other day, Cardi, about the merits of Buffy back in the day. And so obviously he is kind of like, a lot of his work is based around trying to do feminism as well, right? So there's a lot of interesting stuff in here about how like society treats women and how that they think they're objects and that's how the dolls are, combined with the want to have the sexual sort of energy of like essentially a fetish house on it, combined with kind of like people waking up and rebelling against the system, because the overall arc story is these people start to realize that they're actually in a house where they're just being reprogrammed every day for new uses. So it's kind of like many objects that are like fighting against each other in this wider plan. But also that is fighting against the fact that it was a Fox Network show and they didn't like serialized storytelling, because they were like, there needs to be a new episode of the week every week so that casual viewers can watch it. So it's also fighting about the fact that it can't progress its story very quickly. So what he did was he wrote it so that the first 8 episodes are basically just episode of the week. And then on episode 9, it triggers and it turns into a serialized show where it's just telling an ongoing story for the next 4 episodes or whatnot. It's a fascinating relic of like 2009, 2010 television, where we're switching, like HBO is starting to get traction and people want more serialized storytelling, but networks don't understand how to transition out of the, it's just got to be like CSI where there's a different case each week.
It is interesting to think about that as like, if you wanted to make that show, you would just do it elsewhere now. Yeah. But it's like you wanted the only option that you could, but you wanted to tell it in the way that you wanted.
Yeah.
So you had to force a square thing into a circle hole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you're sort of like doing it with the studio that when you made Firefly X amount of years ago, fucking aired it in the wrong order so no one knew what the fuck was going on in it.
That's ideal. I didn't actually know the kind of concept, the premise of a Dollhouse. It does sound quite interesting. It almost sounds a little bit like, I know Westworld was a film originally, but like Westworld before Westworld a little bit.
It's like smash Westworld with Joe 90 and like
Joe 90. I wasn't expecting a Joe.
But that's what it is, isn't it? It's like he put things in his glasses That combined with like bits of Buffy and Angel, and then just like sexy times, and that's Dollhouse basically.
It's a shame it apparently wasn't very good. Otherwise, it sounds like
it's fascinating more than, and like I would watch it again for like from an academic perspective more than anything else. It's wild, but I can remember like really enjoying it at the time, even though it was all over the shop.
Yeah. Have you got any like that, Matt? Are there any? Well, you love your anime. Is there any animes that you, they're messy, but you're like, I love this.
Oh, I've got such a low tolerance for it, honestly. There's a show now called, I was talking about this with my partner last night. We started watching the first episode of it. It's called Oshinoko. That's like a really big hit this year. Like everybody, it's really highly rated. We watched the first episode, which I'm just going to spoil the first episode of this. So we're at nearly the end of the episode if you want to switch off now. But it's about a doctor and his cancer patient that both die and they're reincarnated into siblings that are the children of an idol who it's a secret that she's given birth to kids and she's then killed. And it's about the two of them trying to solve her murder because they remember who they were before they were killed. And it's too much. It's too many concepts all converging on each other. I can't do it.
There we go.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go with that. It does sound interesting. Do you know what I've been thinking recently? Maybe I need to give anime a go. Maybe I need to do it. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking I'll go for one or more of the other ones. I might do it because I know it's meant to be very good and it's actually ending soon, so maybe I could catch up before it ends. Maybe I'll give Attack on Titan.
I think you'd actually really like it.
Yeah, I might do Attack on Titan. Mm-hmm. It's only like 80 episodes, but they're like 20 minutes, aren't they?
So absolutely. And the strange thing about the way that people have been watching it for the last 10 years is that like a season will come out and then maybe not be available for 4 years. So there was plenty of time to catch up with it in the meantime. So yeah,
there we go. I might do it. I'm not promising anything. I've barely got time to sleep at the moment. Mm-hmm. But you know, maybe I'll watch an anime at some point in my life.
Yeah, it's about as good as it gets. I think it'll give you a false expectation of how good the rest of them are. Watching the best one.
I'll watch one.
Is it your favorite one then? If it's the best one,
God, it's really high up there. I mean, my favorite's Mob Psycho 100, but Attack on Titan. Like I because the first season came out and then like season two was 4 or 5 years. I sort of forgot about it. And so I recently, I think during the pandemic, I picked it back up again and I realized just how much I love it. Like, it is just a type of narrative storytelling that really doesn't get done. And it's so efficient. And the stuff that it's drawing from is really specifically it really works for me. It is so cool.
Even I've watched the first season of Attack on Titan. Again, probably because it took so long.
Places is the thing. It becomes an entirely different show.
Well,
I
started watching it because I don't even know if I was a games journalist at the time when I started watching it, but just someone told me, it was like, oh, it's anime Game of Thrones. Like, everybody dies all the time and they're really shocking deaths. And I was like, that sounds cool.
Yeah, I'll give it a go. The other one I was thinking was Evangelion, because that's like 16 episodes.
I like Evangelion.
Mm-hmm. It's very good. Yeah. Oh yeah, the mech show you like.
Yeah. I literally watched it because someone told me, it was like, oh, it's sad kids being forced to fight in mechs, and it's like, sounds my jam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it, if I like D.Va, will I like Evangelion?
Yeah, I think there's no D.Va without Ava's existing.
Okay. They're more monstrous than that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have I only just in my head put together why she's probably called D.Va, because it's like Eva?
I mean, I guess the D.Va is the, like, she is a D.Va, but Ava is like...
Maybe it's a little... Possibly. Yeah.
I think people...
This is probably something people know 7 years ago.
What I will say is that D.Va's like suit is very similar. Like the one that she wears herself is kind of similar to what the pilots of the Avas wear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A very skin tight, like plug-in suit.
Yeah. I'll watch one of those. I might have to subscribe to Crunchyroll.
I think Ava's on Netflix.
Yeah. And the rebuilds are on, which are the film versions of it.
They're on Prime.
Prime, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, there we go. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'll dip in some anime at some point.
Yeah,
I think in my life,
people never talk about how fun Ava is as well. Like, it's normally like, oh, spectacle and like mythology stuff, but it's just fun too.
Lovely.
Until it gets really sad at the end.
Oh yeah, it sucks at the end. Oh, very bad time. Bummer.
Should we have the theme song from season 2 of True Detective?
No, let's have the Ava theme song. Hell yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Alex. Yeah, you've been usurped there by some anime, but. It will happen every now and then. Yeah, let's listen to a bit of that. Hope everyone has a lovely week. But yeah. For now.
Bye.
We've got to go. Goodbye.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.